That's right, folks. It's 5:30. Time for another installment of Rockin' the Boat. My name's the V-Man. I'll be here with you until 6 o'clock. Today on Rockin' the Boat, we'll be discussing genetically modified organisms and the threat they pose to our food and our environment. My guest today is Luke Anderson, author of Genetic Engineering, Food, and Our Environment. Luke Anderson has been a vocal critic of genetically modified organisms, and today on Rockin' the Boat, we will talk about the threats they pose to our health, the environment, and to agriculture, and the upcoming WTO meeting in Sacramento, California. Stand by, stay tuned, Rockin' the Boat, straight ahead, here on Freak Radio. But first, we bring you this week's installment of The Weekly Spin from Laura Miller and the Madison Independent Media Center. PR Watch Radio Spin coming your way.
With another edition of The Weekly Spin, I'm Laura Miller. Most public relations practitioners will tell you that PR is about good communication between an organization and its public. But The Guardian's Mark Borkowski finds a different kind of public relations being practiced by political and corporate institutions. To deal with objections to their actions, these institutions, quote, create smoke screens of confusion and perplexity to enable them to do exactly what they want, regardless of the wishes of the people they are supposed to serve, Borkowski writes. To take matters in order of importance, obfuscation, obfuscation, obfuscation is New Labor's great unsung policy and the one employed to argue away the government's failure to fulfill its unambiguous electoral promises, Borkowski writes. On the other side of the Atlantic, SpinSanity.org's Brian Kiefer observes, President Bush's recent claim that weapons of mass destruction have been found in Iraq highlights two disturbing trends in rhetoric from the White House. The first is the Bush administration's record of factual misstatements and distortions. The second is the administration's, and especially President Bush's, history of strategically ambiguous statements that, while technically or arguably true, imply connections between two things which he cannot directly demonstrate. Kiefer explains how Bush has used language to fudge the difference between weapons and weapons programs, to insinuate a relationship between Saddam Hussein and Al-Qaeda, and to mislead the public about the causes of the U.S. budget deficit and the economic recession. PR trade publication PR Week reports, journalists and government officials complained last week that the Bush administration has virtually abandoned its public affairs operation in Baghdad. Moroccan Ambassador Margaret Tutwiler was sent to oversee the operation in April after major hostilities ended, but according to administration sources, she returned to Morocco within a month. Department of Justice Press Secretary Mark Carallo arrived in May to handle the day-to-day press duties, but stayed just a week after being told by Tutwiler there was no role for him. PR Week reports the U.S. government's public affairs office in Baghdad is barely functional, operating without reliable phones, enough computers, or much accurate information. The U.S. Army has launched a glossy patriotic magazine to rally its 3rd Infantry Division, whose troops face hostile action in the badlands of western Iraq a full 2 months after Saddam Hussein's ouster, Agence France-Presse reports. Called The Liberator, the 16-page in-house publication carries rousing reports from the field to win over homesick troops who might be doubting the rationale for the U.S. presence more than 6 months after they first arrived in Kuwait to train for the invasion. Specialist Jacob Boyer said in the 5,000-copy launch edition, "Forget about the weapons. Forget about national defense. I found my reason for being here. It's the people." Perhaps not surprisingly, the publication lacks any Iraqi voices or any criticism of U.S. forces. Interpress Service reports that the recent appointment of fast food giant McDonald's to the advisory board of an environmental group has drawn accusations of greenwashing from environmentalists and led one board member to resign in protest. Paul Hawken, a well-known activist and environmentalist respected for his strong opposition to corporate globalization, resigned 2 weeks ago from the Green Business Network. Hawken told IPS that McDonald's doesn't have the expertise, the credibility, or the values to be on the steering committee of a green business. Meanwhile, as if to prove his point, the fast food chain is suing a prominent Italian food writer for criticizing its offerings. McDonald's wants Eduardo Rastivelli to fork over millions of dollars for telling an interviewer, among other things, that, gastronomically speaking, I find their meals repellent. CanWest News Service reports, America's big drug companies are intensifying their lobbying efforts to change the Canadian healthcare system and eliminate subsidized prescription drug prices enjoyed by Canadians. $100 million is being added to the already heavily funded drug lobby against the Canadian system. The Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America, otherwise known as PhRMA, is the leading drug industry trade group behind the increased lobbying and PR campaign. For these stories and more, visit the PR Watch website at www.prwatch.org.
And we thank Laura Miller for this week's installment of the Radio Spin. Stand by, rockin' the boat.
Ho ho, the WTO has got to go, hey hey. Ho ho, the WTO has got to go, hey hey. Ho ho, the WTO has got to go. There ain't no power like the power of the people, cause the power of the people don't stop. There ain't no power like the power of the people, cause the power of the people don't stop. There ain't no power like the power of the people, cause the power of the people don't stop. There ain't no power like the power of the people, cause the power of the people don't stop.
Ministers of Trade, Agriculture, and the Environment from 180 nations, including all member states of the World Trade Organization, are expected to participate on June 22nd through 25th in Sacramento, California, in a conference hosted by the United States Department of Agriculture, USAID, and the United States State Department. This meeting will be a stepping stone to the September WTO ministerial meeting in Cancun, Mexico, and the Summit of the Americas on the Free Trade Area of the Americas, scheduled for Miami in November 2003. A big part of the discussion in Sacramento will be centered on the future of biotechnology and the further privatization of the planet's natural resources. A growing debate about the safety of biotech foods has caused great concern among small farmers, consumer groups, and food safety advocates. A broad coalition of people, including farmers, students, environmentalists, labor leaders, academics, and human rights activists, will converge in Sacramento beginning June 20th for a counter-summit of teach-ins, marches, rallies, and direct action to offer a different vision than that of the trade ministers and business heads. Today on Rockin' the Boat, I'm joined by Luke Anderson, author of Genetic Engineering, Food, and Our Environment. Luke Anderson has been a vocal critic of GMOs, and today we will talk about the threats they pose to our health, the environment, and to agriculture, as well as the upcoming WTO meeting in Sacramento. Luke Anderson is joining us by phone from somewhere in Northern California. Thanks for joining me today, Luke Anderson.
Good afternoon.
Well, why don't we begin by having you maybe explain, your book is sort of lays out kind of step by step how the whole genetic engineering process came about, and it's a very concise guide to that. Maybe you can just tell us briefly, what is genetically engineered foods, why are they being introduced, and maybe briefly touch upon some of the implications that they have for health.
Well, genetic engineering basically refers to a new set of molecular techniques developed since the 80s, really, that allow scientists to take DNA from any organism, a plant, a virus, an animal, an insect, a bacteria, even from a human, and engineer it into, for example, a food crop to reproduce a desired characteristic. Some examples from here in California. Last year, there were field trials in San Diego done by a biotech company called Epicyte of corn plants engineered with human genes so that the corn plants contained a rare class of human antibodies that attack sperm, the idea being that these corn plants could then be turned into some kind of plant gel contraceptive that would kill sperm on contact. And this is an example of what's called a farming, PHARMING, the genetic engineering of food crops or animals so that they can be essentially drug factories for the production of chemicals. Also last year, we saw the first field trials of a genetically engineered insect, 3,600 genetically engineered moths released in a cage in a field in Arizona, engineered with a fluorescing gene coming from a jellyfish. So these are all examples of things that can be done with the use of genetic engineering techniques that could not be done with traditional breeding practices. And one of the main main incentives to develop genetically engineered crops is a patent system that's been in effect really since the 80s that allow corporations to patent DNA and new living organisms as their own inventions. Of the 30,000 genes now believed to be in the human genome, over 1,000 of those have already been patented or patents are pending. And patents are also being used to expropriate the genetic resources of so-called third world countries, the countries that are poorest in economic terms but richest in terms of genetic diversity. So these are all some of the things that are being done, and genetically engineered crops are being released at 50 million hectares planted in the United States in 2001. That's the bad news. The good news is that very few other countries around the world are planting genetically engineered crops. Of the global total, the United States represented 68%, with Argentina coming second with 22%, Canada with 6%, China with 3%.
Luke, proponents of this stuff, GMO foods, they maintain that this is the solution to the world's hunger problems, that it will end famine, improve nutrition, and it is increasing agricultural productivity, and that it is a testament to humans' sort of dominion over nature. They also say that there's proof that it doesn't cause any harm to the environment or to unleash this stuff into the market. What does the data bear out, and is there any conclusive study saying that genetically modified organisms are or are not okay one way or the other?
Okay, firstly, the feed the world argument, and this is really the Sacramento ministerial is timed also to coincide with the launch by the Bush administration of a WTO suit against the European Union for its failure to further approve genetically engineered organisms. And the rhetoric associated with the launch of this WTO suit, apart from the fact that Bush says he's in the process of gathering a coalition of the willing, I think I heard that language somewhere before, to fight Europe, is that the European blockade on genetically engineered foods is turning off African countries who are really crying out to use this technology but are afraid to because they'll lose exports to Europe. Well, no one's really fooled by this rhetoric except the victims of the U.S. corporate media machine. The United States recently was the only government in the world to vote against a U.N. human right to food resolution that was going through the United Nations. And in fact, the strongest opposition to genetic engineering has come from the poorest countries in the world. 24 delegates from 18 African countries, for example, signed a statement in which they said that we strongly object to the image of the poor and hungry from our countries being used by giant multinational corporations to push a technology that we believe is neither safe, environmentally friendly, nor economically beneficial to us. Most countries in the world are keenly aware that the reason that people are starving is because of the economic system that keeps the people of the world under the heel of empire. We're already producing enough food to feed 1.5 times the current world population with an adequate nutritious diet. And yet 30,000 people are dying every day in a world which is overproducing food from hunger. And in terms of the ecological consequences of the release of genetically engineered organisms, there have been numerous studies really showing just how serious the consequences could be. For example, the first genetically engineered animals probably going to end up on people's dinner plates in the United States, genetically engineered salmon. Fish are being engineered in about 50 laboratories around the world to better suit them to intensive aquaculture production, i.e. fish that are engineered to grow faster, to reach harvestable age more quickly. And some scientists at Purdue University used computer models to look at what the consequences could be of the escape of just 60 genetically engineered fish into a wild population of 60,000. And that's a very conservative estimate of an escape. We know that from fish farms, thousands and thousands of fish frequently escape when storms tear apart the sea cages, etc. And what these scientists at Purdue University found is that with this genetically engineered fish that was engineered to grow faster, it was bigger and more attractive to mates. But for some reason, as a result of the genetic engineering process, its offspring were less likely to be viable, were less likely to survive. And what this meant is that with the genetically engineered fish attracting more of the mates but producing less viable offspring, with the release of just 60 genetically engineered fish into a population of 60,000, there was a local extinction in just 40 generations.
Wow, that's pretty scary. You mentioned the suit, the WTO, that was brought into the WTO by the United States that was filed in mid-May. Can you talk a little bit more about this suit against the European Union and their moratorium on biotechnology? Where do you think it will go?
Yeah, I mean, what's actually happened in Europe has been that the governments have been dragged by the European public into this moratorium. Most European governments were actually behind the introduction of genetically engineered foods. You know, our governments are as much a part of the global elite as the U.S. government, and but the European public was massively opposed to biotech, with a slightly less controlled media in Europe. People really heard about what was going on and declared their firm opposition to it by boycotting any products that came into the market that contained genetically engineered ingredients. We've had a labeling system in effect since 1998 in Europe, and in fact I often joke that even the pigs in Europe get their genetically engineered food labeled. There is labeling of animal feed in Europe, whereas people in the United States do not have that right. And all the supermarkets and major food producers in Europe have banned the use of genetically engineered ingredients now, not because they woke up one morning feeling like being environmentalists, but because they were forced to by massive public pressure. And so this WTO suit, led by the Bush administration, just shows once again the complete lack of regard the U.S. government has for democratic process in another country. The rhetoric, as I said earlier, is all about feeding the world, and yet it's very clearly about buoying up U.S. Corporations, in particular the big biotech corporations that also control most of the global pesticide market. One of the things about Sacramento, other than this Bush administration WTO suit that's so relevant, is that the Achilles heel of the WTO agreement is the agreement on agriculture. Some analysts have even suggested that the whole WTO process could actually unravel in September in Mexico because of continued failure to reach agreement on agriculture. So what this meeting in Sacramento is really about is it's a last-ditch attempt by the United States to convince the countries, in particular countries of the third world that have been most in opposition to the WTO agreement on agriculture, that the U.S. corporations and U.S. global vision of agriculture dominated by genetic engineering, food irradiation, and big corporate farms is really in their interest. And no one's, to be honest, really fooled by this. So strategically, this ministerial in Sacramento is a great place for anyone who wants to have a quite interesting impact on the whole WTO process, and indeed on the process of other free trade agreements, such as the FTAA.
We're speaking with Luke Anderson, author of Genetic Engineering, Food, and Our Environment. Anderson is a vocal critic of genetically modified organisms, and today we're talking about the threats that they pose to our health and the upcoming WTO meeting in June in Sacramento, California. Luke, this meeting in Sacramento takes on extra significance as it is being hosted in California, the United States' largest agricultural producer. And as we move into, you know, here in California, we're now moving into the center stage on the debate of GMO foods. I'd like to read for you briefly from an article that was published in the Sacramento Bee Sunday, June 8th. It's titled "Biotech Debate Simmers in California. State Farms Key in Fight Over Biotech." As you're mentioning, agriculture is sort of the linchpin to these discussions. The article starts, "Since Roger Hsu first planted electric blue genetically engineered cotton seeds 3 years ago, he has spent less fuel, less time, and less money controlling weeds on his ranches. Like many in California's $870 million cotton industry, the 39-year-old farmer loves his high-tech crop. Now, rather than using expensive hand labor and specialized herbicides to kill the range of weeds on his land, he can just blast the whole area with two applications of Roundup and not worry about harming his crop. Quote, GMO cotton is like cotton growing for dummies, said Hsu, who eagerly awaits other herbicide-resistant crops such as alfalfa. Quote, it's less stress and less money, end quote. The seed technology embraced on more than 200,000 acres of cotton in the Central Valley of California is about to get bigger and more controversial. Test, major California food crops. As soon as next year, California's farmers may have the chance to grow herbicide-resistant rice. After that, wheat, lettuce, grapes, and strawberries are likely targets for the crops known by the acronym GMO. What can you say about this phenomenon where farmers are sort of dazzled by this new technology, and what does that mean for us as consumers?
Well, I think the article said it pretty clearly, farming for dummies, and I think what that really means is short-sighted, short-term fixes designed to deal with the problems of industrial agriculture, the problems of ever-evolving weed and pest resistance to the many chemicals that are currently being used. If you apply a broad-spectrum herbicide such as Roundup to the same crop year after year that's designed to be herbicide-resistant, what do? You provide the perfect conditions for weeds to build up resistance over time, meaning ever-increasing doses of the chemical. And, it's a short-term solution at best. I think we really need to completely rethink the way that agriculture is being done. We have the amazing tools available to us. In the year 2000, rather, a survey was done, the largest ever survey of sustainable agricultural practices around the world, surveying 4.42 million farmers that switched to a range of sustainable agricultural techniques in the poorest countries in the world. And this survey found that there was an average increase of 73% in household food production, far in excess of anything even suggested by the biotech industry. Certainly in California, within a couple of years, we could see the commercialization of genetically engineered rice, followed by wheat, also in the pipeline, strawberries, lettuce, grapes. We are now really at a crucial time in this debate over genetic engineering. People are going to have to make their minds up. Are they happy with the fact that what is being laid out by the U.S. government is the genetic engineering of all the organisms that we work with in agriculture, microorganisms, animals, and plants, and including forests, by the way? Sacramento is going to be the launch of a major international campaign against international paper for its support of genetically engineered forests. People really need to make a decision. Is this genetically engineered future something that people are happy with, or are they going to stand up and make sure that their voice is counted? In Europe, we pretty much, through people who care about this, being willing to do whatever they can about it, we pretty much slowed the thing to a standstill. I'm pretty sure the same thing can happen, particularly in somewhere like California. There is a campaign to try to get a moratorium declared across California. And this Sacramento meeting is really going to be the first time there's been such a massive display of opposition to genetic engineering in particular, and also all the other things that go in the content of the U.S. vision of global agricultural development and privatization of water. You mentioned at the beginning that environmentalists and food activists and union people are going to be at this action, at these series of demonstrations. The other major group that's going to be involved are the peace movement. They're anti-war activists that are really embracing the global justice campaigns. And I think it's pretty clear, as Arundhati Roy said recently, that there are two ways in which empire spreads its tentacles. One is with cruise missiles, and the other is with the checkbook. And though the checkbook might appear more benign than a bombing campaign or a military invasion of some kind, it's no less devastating in terms of the day-to-day impact on people's lives. So I think that we need to fight war on all fronts, and it's really encouraging to see that Action for Local Global Justice and Direct Action to Stop the War, two of the largest groups that were involved in shutting down San Francisco at the outset of the Iraq bombing campaign, have fully endorsed this mobilization. So that's probably 70 or 80 affinity groups at least coming from the San Francisco area to Sacramento to take place, to take part in the direct action.
We're speaking again with Luke Anderson. He is the author of Genetic Engineering, Food and Our Environment. And we have just a few minutes left here. And I guess I you mentioned earlier the difference in media over in Europe. And I guess my one final thought, you're talking about this global justice movement kind of linking up with the anti-war movement and how that phenomenon sort of needs to happen if we're going to really put any kind of serious resistance up against this corporate domination that is threatening all of our lives. But I guess maybe on this particular issue, we've heard about crop pulls and how some activists have actually gone out and destroyed some of these things. Maybe you can give us some idea as a British person, how things are done differently in Europe and in India, and maybe how American activists can learn from that.
Well, there's definitely a different political climate in the United States. I mean, as someone once said to me recently, okay, let's give them some slack. Let's call it pre-fascism here in the United States. And certainly in terms of like direct action, there's a lot more support for it in Europe. People are pulling up genetically engineered crops all the time in Britain. And there's still not a single jury in England that's willing to convict people who freely admit pulling up genetically engineered gives you a sense of the level of awareness and opposition there is in the general public that juries are acquitting people who freely admit pulling these crops up. Whereas here in the United States, it's a federal crime even to trespass on a field trial site where they're testing genetically engineered crops. We're also in Europe given six-figure grid references. That is sort of the exact location of these field trials. Whereas in the United States, it's all kept secret. I was doing some research of Hawaii, where there which is one of the main international testing grounds for experimental genetically engineered crops. And I was looking at the information put out by the U.S. government on these field trials. And where it says lists, you know, the sources of the genes engineered into these crops, it gives all the different, you know, coming from a plant or an animal or a human. But the most common gene that appears is the CBI gene. And for a while I thought maybe it was some technical term that I didn't understand. And then I finally got it. It's the confidential business information gene. That is the gene that, that is the term that's given to genetic characterization that the companies don't even have to give to the U.S. government. Corporations in the United States voluntarily consult with the U.S. government if they think there are any safety concerns. And even the government departments themselves sometimes don't have information about what kind of trials are taking place. So it's extremely difficult for activists to find out. And I think it's really more, there's more potential, I think, in targeting key strategic events such as this ministerial taking place in Sacramento. Where there's an opportunity to really use the event both in terms of our opposition and our attempt to disrupt this meeting and have an impact on the further WTO meetings, but also as a way to articulate what it is that we stand for. For example, it's proposed that at the intersections that get blocked in the street demonstrations on Sunday and Monday, that those intersections will also be transformed into some kind of permaculture display gardens. You can imagine the lock boxes with people locked down, covered in piles of earth and herb spirals on the top. That's the kind of thing that we are proposing, and there's lots of really interesting direct action ideas going around, and people can get more information from the Sacramento Mobilization website, which is sacmobilization.org, as things develop.
And we're speaking with Luke Anderson, the author of Genetic Engineering, Food, and Our Environment. Luke joins us from Northern California via telephone. Any final thoughts today, Luke Anderson?
One other thing that I haven't mentioned is that partly this mobilization in Sacramento is a response to a call to action that came from hundreds and hundreds of groups from across the global south. The Via Campesina, for example, who represent 40 million peasant farmers. Now, these are people that can't jump on a plane and get to Sacramento to demonstrate. But they said, please, can people in the United States go to this ministerial, demonstrate opposition, both opposition for your own reasons and also to express solidarity with our struggles. And I think it's really important that those of us who are in any way able to get to Sacramento do make the effort. It is, after all, those of us that live in this country that can have far more effect on the policies of the U.S. government than anyone outside. I think it's going to be an exciting mobilization.
All right. Well, we really thank you for your time today, and we'll see you up in Sacramento.
Okay, thanks
very much. Thanks for joining me today on Rockin' the Boat.
And indeed, that's going to wrap it up for us today here at 96.3 FM Free Radio Santa Cruz. My name's V-Man, signing off for Rockin' the Boat. Stay tuned. Thanks for listening.
Several times a year, the ruling corporate and governmental elites come together in exotic locations to decide the fates of nations. They gather under different guises, blinding the world with their alphabet soup. WTO, IMF, FTAA, GATT, NAFTA, the World Bank. These meetings have always been secret, but the agendas have always been the same. With a single-minded focus on destroying the environment and enslaving the workers of the world, their sinister plots have remained unchallenged for years. There has been no democratic process allowed, no public consent required, and absolutely no possible way for your voice to be heard. No way, that is. Until now!
Would you like to shut down the corporate slime and smash up their conference?
Would you like to travel to lovely places like London, Seattle, Prague, and Genoa?
Then come on down to the next anti-corporate globalization protest.
meet interesting people from around the world, and riot with them.
Four, friendships and connections that can last a lifetime.
See, the beautiful capitals of the world and their correctional facilities.
Are you a winner?
To feel an invigorating sense of power in the midst of extreme chaos?
Then don't wait. Start your direct action project now. And remember, this is an event open to all people of all ages, so bring your friends, bring your family, and bring your neighbors.
I had so much fun at my first protest that for the next one, I brought all of my friends with their gas masks.
I learned a whole new way to use my baseball bat. Boy, they never showed us this in P.E.
I met the cutest Greek boy. He showed me his Molotov cocktail.
Sponsored in part by the Infernal Noise Brigade. Who would ask you to please remember?
Multinational corporations do not collapse by themselves.
They need your help.